Hello, students, and welcome to Class of X, the free internet course on how to read and enjoy the X-Men comics better. I'm your teacher and host, John Reisinger, and today we are talking about the messiahs of the X-Men world. Nathan, Christopher, Charles, Dayspring, Ascanison, Summers, and Hope Summers. Hey guys, welcome back to another opportunity, another day, another week, another chance to talk about the X-Men and learn about how fun they are and how confusing they are and how weird they are. I had a plan for a different episode for this weekend's release. I've been reading through the Phalanx Covenant, which is the origin of Generation X. Generation X is the Emma Frost and Banshee-led young group of teens from the 90s that I love. Jubilee was the one from the X-Men that kind of like was the connective tissue, but the rest of the team were brand new mutants. And I've been reading through that. And Phalanx Covenant is actually really interesting. I realized I had never read it. And I'm reading through it, and it's actually a fun crossover, but it's very long. A lot goes on, and so I'm taking a little bit longer than I mean to make it through that story and make my notes and get ready to do an episode on it. But as luck would have it, one of our Discord users posted a picture. Osneth on our Discord posted a picture of what seemed to be a family tree collage of the Gray and Summers family, and it is inspired by some recent revelations about Hope Summers's origin that happened during the fall of House of X and rise of Powers of 10, the end of the Krakoa event that we covered last week or last episode. So it just kind of sparked a little chuckle with me because it highlights how screwy their family is, not just like drama-wise, but just lineage. We'll go over that a little bit at the end of this episode, but it kind of made me think this is a good opportunity to talk a little bit about what happened after the Messiah Complex, because we did do an episode covering the Messiah Complex. And then also get to kind of really give you guys an explanation of who that baby is from the Messiah Complex, and maybe give you guys a refresher, a deep dive, a shallow dive, a attempted dive at Cable's story and origins. Full disclosure, anyone who is ever trying to talk about Cable from the X-Men in an informative way is at best attempting a public service for anybody listening, because it is nigh impossible to get everything right about him, because I love this character, but even I, who have been reading X-Men since I was 7, still don't fully understand his characters, like the character's timeline, and there is so much backstory, side quests, additive material, retcons. I think it's almost impossible to make an accurate timeline of who Cable is. But since Hope is important to the X-Men history, the character Hope, and she's basically a second version of the Cable character that was constructed, it kind of works to talk about them both at the same time. So like I said, we did an episode on the Messiah Complex, which was a multi-issue crossover event that followed the House of M event, where Scarlet Witch said no more mutants and basically made that there was only 198 mutants left on the planet and no more were being born. And then following that, 2 years later, a new mutant is born, a baby, and it sparks that whole rigmarole that happens where Sinister feels like he needs the baby, Cable gets the baby, and Bishop wants to kill the baby. Everyone's doing it for their own either selfish or altruistic reasons or both. But in the end, Cable is the one who's able to flee into the future to save the baby, albeit couldn't save Professor X from being shot by Bishop, who was trying to do the murdering. And so when Cable left with Hope into the baby, who I keep calling Hope because that's her name, in case you hadn't made that connection yet, when he flees into the future, that was a very intentional mirroring of Cable's origin. And anybody who watched X-Men 97, you know, kind of has a little bit of a taste, an hors d'oeuvre of Cable's origin story. But I'm here to tell you that, like almost everything else that happened in X-Men 97, entertaining and fun, but also not technically comic canon. It would, I guess, be considered its own alternate universe canon, because that's how Marvel Comics and X-Men comics work. You just have put a number at the end of it, and that's it's Earth 54321, and that's X-Men 97. But I'm going to try to give you guys a little bit of a kind of a bullet point history of Cable. Some of it's going to be repetition of what we've talked about in previous episodes, but in case you haven't listened to previous episodes and this is your first one getting into, I'll give you a little bit of a light touch of who Cable is. He's definitely, you know, partly what you see in the Deadpool 2 movie. He's partly what you see in the original 90s X-Men cartoon. He's partly what you see in X-Men 97. It's even more complicated and weird, but fun. I think you'll understand why I love this character. Not just because he's a cool big guy with a really cool robot arm, and I like guys with robot arms for some reason. I don't know why. I don't think it's part of like any sort of trauma I have, but who knows? So the legitimate child of Scott Summers and Madeline Pryor is Nathan. Nathan was born from Madeline, who is turned out to be the clone of Jean Grey. Scott and her were married, and they had a baby, and he was kind of neglected by his father at first. We talked about Inferno, where mom went a little crazy. So he's got parental issues from the get-go, but then he's eventually, in a few stories later, which I think we covered in also another previous episode, he was stolen by Apocalypse, who saw him as a potential host for Apocalypse to kind of enter and be reborn. And so he infected the baby with a techno-organic virus, which is a virus from space that basically converts biological matter into techno-organic matter. And it was kind of like sort of a way to control the baby, sort of a way to like test the baby if it was like sturdy enough. Long story short, the plan obviously is thwarted by the X-Men, but Nathan is now in danger of being turned into Robo Baby. And so there is this time traveler that is on this adventure of Apocalypse's debacle. And she is from an alternate reality future religious cult. And she, you know, says, if you want the baby to live, give me him, and I'll take him to the 38th century, and we will take care of him and make sure that he doesn't turn into a full Borg. So Scott has to make the very difficult decision of handing over his baby. He's lost his wife and the baby's mom. And the baby is now about to be killed by this alien virus. And so he has to send the baby with a sort of stranger into the future and trust. And so the good news about that is eventually Scott and Jean are able to travel to the future. Their souls travel to the future and inhabit clones of their original bodies. And they are hanging out with this religious cult who are called Ascanison. They are able to kind of give an opportunity to kind of secretly raise Nathan. They have code names. I think it's Slim and Red. I think this is from the comic book The Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix. This was basically a afterwards addition to explain, you know, a little bit of Cable's history, because Cable came onto the scene as a full grown white-haired old man. And so this is all stuff that came out after those issues, and this is information about like who he is. So they're able to kind of raise him a little bit. Jean, this is where Jean's connection to Cable comes into play. She, through Inferno, she shared all of Maddie's feelings and memories and emotions. So a part of Maddie is in her, so she feels a connection to Nathan. And then in this future, she was able to actually raise Nathan a bit. So for all intents and purposes, Jean really acts a lot as Cable's mom. In fact, he calls her mom usually. in some way or the other, especially when he's like young Cable, which we're not really going to get into today. Young Cable is a whole different thing. Nathan is also cloned in the future in case the virus kills him. And that's how we get that evil clone that I keep talking about in previous episodes, Strife. He has all the powers and potential of Cable, none of the techno-organic virus, and he's crazy. And it was kind of a game of cat and mouse and back and forth of who was the real baby and who was the clone. And for a while, it was actually considered Strife was the real one and Cable was the broken clone. But then that was sort of either retconned or clarified that Cable is, in fact, the real deal and Strife is the clone. So Cable's timeline, like I've said, is maybe the most convoluted and screwy time travel story ever created. I don't say that hyperbolically. It is a product of so many additions and retcons and different storytellers that you can read through it all, and it's all very interesting, or a lot of it's really interesting, but I'm not going to try and unravel that all. All of his, like, stuff that happened when he was a youth and when he was considered the Traveler and his early fights with like Strife and Apocalypse and all that kind of stuff. I just can't right now. And I'm going to ask you guys to just not make me do it. And we're going to eventually, we're going to kind of like fast forward into the eventual adult war hardened Cable that travels to his past, our present at the time, who is at that time chasing his evil clone Strife. Strife was raised by Apocalypse and then eventually attempts to usurp Apocalypse and really becomes like the nemesis of Cable at that point. Cable then in the present, has to kind of get his bearings a little bit. He has a little bit of an adventure on Muir Island with Moira McTaggart. But he, at one point then, I think for like money, makes a mercenary team, as you do. They're called Six Pack. And they have a bunch of adventures. They're a bunch of like old war dogs and soldiers, and they eventually fight Strife, who kind of sort of gets them killed with a bomb after a while. And after that, Cable then goes to the future again and finds another mystery that he needs to come back to the present to deal with. And he finds in the 23rd century, he finds Samuel Guthrie, who is known as Cannonball, who he knew was a kid back in the present day when he was back in like in the 90s, and he's still alive and it doesn't make sense. And this is where the reveal happens that Cannonball is part of a new advanced race of mutants called the Eternals. This is not super important, but still fun information, because I think This is a plot line that was never resolved and has kind of been forgotten now at this point. A lot of people don't consider Cannonball an immortal anymore, although technically he is an immortal. In fact, he at one point on X-Force, he dies and then comes back and doesn't know how he came back. So this is why Cable then goes back in time again to the present to lead the New Mutants and kind of secure Cannonball's ascension in sort of a way of becoming... Cable serves a lot, which is very apt for this episode, as kind of a caretaker of the future of mutants, which is interesting that he contrasts Apocalypse, who also sees himself as a caretaker of the future of mutants, but they go about it with different tactics and manage to also be, you know, arch enemies of each other. But like I said, he goes back, and this is where he's like leading the New Mutants and then leading X-Force. And this is the version of X-Force that has like Sunspot and Richter and all those kinds of characters. Eventually, we get to Executioner's Song, which we did a whole fun episode on. I highly recommend you listen to that episode if you haven't. It's a big fight between Strife and Cable, who Strife is trying to kill Professor X and blame Cable for it. They have a big old fight in the end and seemingly die in what was like a time vortex. But I think I said this during the episode. Cable does survive. Cable looks to die a lot of times. Cable is like very much like his mom, quote unquote, dies a lot, but isn't dead and is actually fine or recovering somewhere, or he got thrown into the future. And then he eventually finds his way back to the present constantly. This time he finds himself in the future and Strife died, but now Strife's haunting him. Like literally Strife's like psyche was absorbed by Cable and is now haunting him. It's very screwed up. And then we get to different eras of like Cable's history where like Nate Gray, also known as X-Man, shows up from the Age of Apocalypse, which is an alternate reality where Apocalypse was in charge. We covered that in one of our earliest episodes of the show. Cable also then eventually gets a power buff because he's always had power issues because the techno-organic virus is constantly fighting him. But he eventually gets a buff and then gets nerfed and almost dies from the techno-organic virus thanks to Onslaught, who we haven't covered yet. I still want to do an Onslaught episode. I really want to make someone like either my friends like Blaine or James or someone read it with me because it's very 90s and I'm very curious to read it again in the daylight of the modern day and see how it holds up. Probably not well, but I think it's still fun. At some point, Cable also, like, when he, like, almost dies in the Technogenic Virus and then doesn't die and then but has almost no control over his powers, he finds this thing called a scimitar, spelled P-S-I-M-I-T-A-R, like a scimitar, but scimitar. And that helps him channel his powers again. And he kind of wields that for a while. It's kind of a cool weapon upgrade that he gets. Then he eventually kills Apocalypse with the scimitar, kind of fulfilling his destiny, or at least one of them. This guy picks up destinies like new hobbies. And so he saves his dad, who was taken over. This is part of the 12 storyline, which is another... For some reason, people don't like the 12. I liked the 12 when I read it. And so it's, again, it's another thing I need to reread and be like, was I just an idiot when I read the 12 and just a naive, like, little X-Men fanboy? Or is it not that as bad as people try to make it? Anyways, Scimitar kills Apocalypse. He fulfills his destiny. And then after that, Cable and Deadpool happens. House of M happens. Marvel's Civil War happens, which is very different from the movie. And then this is when we get to Supernova, which we covered in an episode. That's the team where Rogue was in charge of her own kind of roguish team. They fight those super advanced metahumans that come out of that time controlling boat. Man, again, sometimes I listen to the words I say describing the X-Men and I'm like, I sound like a crazy person talking about crazy things, but that's the X-Men. So yeah, we covered new supernovas in a previous episode. Again, if this episode had a appendices, I'd direct you to that episode. Cable at the end of Supernovas, or at the end of like that whole run with Rogue on her team, he again looks like he dies in an explosion, but he survives. And that's what eventually brings us to Messiah Complex, which was the story where the baby comes around. Now we can talk about the baby, who is Hope. There, like I said, there were some recent revelations about Hope's origin. And I'm going to cover those at the end of this section of the episode. But she was a baby born from a mystery woman in a small town and is the first new mutant to happen in 2 years after Scarlet Witch's uh-oh. And so this is after Messiah Complex. When you want to follow that adventure, then you got to read Cable Volume 2. And that's what I read a bunch to kind of prep for this episode. It's a very fun story with this very painterly style art. It's a time travel sci-fi epic. It's Cable being at his best. And this is probably why I love this. I have such an affinity towards this story is because I really like Cable. And this is a really good version of Cable written very well. In this story, we do learn that while Bishop lost his arm in the Messiah Complex fight to Predator X, the big old monster thing that eats his arm, he then manages to cauterize it on Sunfire and hijacks like a new arm, like a robotic arm So he can be twinsies with Cable. He steals this from Forge and steals a time travel device also from Forge, which this is another instance where you realize Forge just needs to stop making everything that comes to his mind. he's called the Maker, and that's what he does. That's his mutant power, and I know that's it's probably like an itch that he has to scratch. But boy, howdy, every time this guy makes a very, very powerful piece of equipment, it falls into the wrong hands, and Bishop uses this to be able to do a lot of naughty things. Cable is attempting to hide the baby in the future while also kind of raising her, because he sees her as this savior of mutant kind, and I mean, arguably so, is valid in thinking that if she was left in the present day, she would not survive. Because, like, Sinister was trying to steal her, and the Purifiers were trying to kill her, and that kind of thing. So it wasn't safer in the present, but he's trying to hide her in the future. But then Bishop chases them and really turns full scorched earth. This is an era, like, you read Cable Volume 2, and this makes it really hard to like Bishop for a while. He makes a really good villain. I'll say that. Like, you just can't like him as a hero very much. And this is kind of his heel turn. And on one hand, he does a lot of his nasty bits because he thinks or even knows that these atrocities will be erased if he can get the baby and kill her. Because he thinks that Hope is the one that brings around his timeline, his very bad apocalyptic timeline. He thinks that Hope is the reason why the humans eventually are able to fully uprise against the mutants and enslave them. And so he thinks that if Hope can't be around, then that can't happen. On the other hand, boy, he does a lot of atrocities, like basically kills almost the entire planet. And eventually teams up with Strife. So not good choices, you know. And I can't explain to you how Bishop gets redeemed where we can like him again. But somehow it happens, which is this is what it means to be an X-Men fan sometimes where you have to, you know, you're allowed to love like certain parts of characters' histories, but then other parts you just kind of have to accept. And maybe even move on from. It makes it like almost all of the X-Men have bad eras of their characters because they're written by a lot of different people and they've been around for decades. And so almost everybody has a villain era. Maybe not Storm. I think Storm might be one that never did a whoopsies. She definitely never did like a genocide or a bad... Did she do a bad murder at some point? I don't know. Maybe Storm had a bad point, and I just can't think of it right now. But almost everyone's had a bad point. They haven't been as bad as this era of Bishop. I highly recommend you read this era so you can fully understand what I'm talking about. You know, because like I said, this is a really good story, but Bishop goes bad. This goes very bad. He becomes very bad. Cable, however, reaches full dad goals in this story. It's a wonderful era of Cable because he's always struggled with like paternal activities. He obviously has parental issues and very bad daddy issues. And sometimes he's dealt with those daddy issues. Sometimes he hasn't. But at the same time, he's also historically like treated most children that have been under his care as soldiers first and foremost. He also had an adoptive son before named Tyler, who he had to shoot Tyler. I don't think he's the one who killed Tyler. I can't remember. Anyways, that's going to give you issues with children that are yours. And he's also like absolutely a like, quote unquote, this is for your own good kind of dad, which is a lot of tough love and kind of lacking in nurturing moments. And then on top of all that, he's from an apocalyptic wasteland in the future that he's just always trying to avoid happening. Like that's his entire spiel, but he forms a real bond with this baby who he originally like, you know, takes care of for the sake of the future, but he definitely learns bonds with this girl and tries to keep a kind of a distance from her, He doesn't even name her until she's, gosh, like into like early elementary ages. And he, during the one of their, like, if you read through Cable Volume 2, they eventually settle down in this hidden settlement in the future. He this is where he really forms a real bond with her. He marries a woman in the future where Hope gets her name from. He marries a woman named Hope, who's Hope Summers the first. Technically, Hope, who I'm talking about, is Hope Summers the second. And he pulls a John Wick and buries his past under concrete to raise Hope in a not gun-toting kind of environment, at least at that point. And he like really starts making like real promises to this kid that he intends to keep. All the while during this, like, we also do a lot of flashbacks in this story to Cyclops, who's dealing with his own trauma because he had to like have a deja vu moment where he let Cable take the baby. And that was like watching Cable go into the future again, his baby. And that's gonna trigger a lot. Cyclops doesn't sleep well for a while, and doesn't know why. Time travel means that if Cable was successful, he should have been able to return immediately. But he doesn't know why Cable wasn't able to return immediately with the safe baby. So he uses like Beast to try to track down what's going on. This is actually one of those rare instances where Beast tries to call Cyclops out on being a naughty guy, which is ironic considering Beast's future of being just one of the worst turds ever. Cyclops also uses X-Force with Wolverine at the helm as his little, again, spy ops, you know, little killer team to try to track down Bishop. This is also when Cyclops is heading towards this full militant extremist era that he has, that kind of leads to the schism and all that kind of stuff. And it's, in my humble opinion, one of the best and most interesting eras of Cyclops. I always argue that people think Cyclops is boring, but all you have to do is read Cyclops stories and you realize he's not that boring. He's very complex. And I won't spoil the entire run of Cable Volume 2, but if we can leap all the way forward, spoiler, Cable and Hope eventually do make it back to the present, which we know because I've talked about Hope in the present for quite a while. So you already know that. So I'm not spoiling anything, but she does. And she comes back to the present when she's like a teenager. So that's how long it takes for Cable to kind of resolve their adventures in the future and return back to the present. And that's where we meet Hope as this mutant messiah. Hope is an Omega level power borrower, it finds out, or a power cloner, or you know, kind of a copycat. This first manifests in Second Coming, where she uses like all of the X-Men powers to defeat Bastion, who is trying to blow up their island. It's very a la Rogue in the first fight with Nimrod from the old X-Men comics, where Rogue touches like Colossus and Nightcrawler, and is able to kind of overwhelm Nimrod. Hope does the same thing to kill Bastion, who does some really bad stuff to the X-Men. And this is also then leads into the lights appearing. Like, they refer to these five new mutants that are the first new mutants to appear on Cerebra's map. They call them the lights because they're the first lights they see in years, and they are triggered by Hope's return to the present. And so these are five new mutants, and Hope then kind of goes on an adventure to find them. She helps them like stabilize their powers or learn to use them if it's needed, and recruits them to her team. And this is during a storyline called Generation Hope. And this was the X-Men comics kind of revving back up in a post House of M era, where mutants are now going to start, you know, maybe showing up again, which then leads us to Hope's connection to the Phoenix. Hope is a descendant of Hope. Okay, I almost got ahead of myself. The Phoenix is returning back to the Earth at one point, and so Cyclops sees it as something that could reignite, because the Phoenix is resurrection incarnate, that could reignite the mutant race. And Hope seems to be the most likely candidate for the host of the Phoenix, because at this point, Jean is dead. This is after New X-Men, when Jean was killed. And so this is where Avengers versus X-Men happens, another storyline that I really enjoyed that I want to do an episode on, so I won't go over the full story of that. But that's the elevator pitch of Avengers versus X-Men. The Phoenix is returning, and Cyclops thinks it can help make mutants again. And the Avengers are like, the Phoenix also can, like, destroy the Earth and eat the sun. Maybe we shouldn't be all about the Phoenix. So that's the whole fight. And then if we jump way forward, this is where we finally get to the Krakoan era, where Hope is part of the Five. And because of her powers, she's a central part of the Five, which really fulfills even more of her messianic kind of complex, because she is literally granting everlasting life to mutants is what she's doing. Very Jesus, which is why it's so fun that Exodus, who is a bit of a religious zealot, latches on to Hope. And I love during the Krakoan era, Exodus's and Hope's kind of relationship, where he was like her little prophet and apostle and caretaker and bodyguard. It's so good. This is where we finally get to the reveal of who are Hope's parents. It's fair warning, it's very Rey Skywalker vibes, of this, you know, kind of coming savior of a new generation. What happens in the Fall of House of X is we kind of meet again Hope's mother, who Hope does find out who she is before this by taking a trip to Alaska to kind of find out where she came from. Her mother is Louise Spalding, and she's a firefighter captain, so she's a tough gal. And she is visited by the godlike entity that is Enigma, that is the original Mr. Sinister. We find out to be the original one who sent out clones of himself. One of the clones is the Mr. Sinister we know, with the diamond on his head. But this Sinister or original managed to reach like ascendancy into godhoodness. And he wants to hit, basically in the final fight with the Fall of House of X, it's the Phoenix is the thing that could take him down. And so he knows that if he can go back and he can make it so that he is the progenitor of Hope, he can then control the future of the X-Men, the future of the Phoenix, and his future. So he's attempting to persuade her mom to just let that happen. Jean Grey, with the power of the Phoenix, intervenes, and that's how we get this whole kind of immaculate conception situation, where it turns out Jean, via the Phoenix, is the dad of Hope. She's the reason why, at the very least, that Louise Spalding becomes pregnant with Hope. So that's why we call Jean her dad. So this revelation now makes the Summers Gray family, which was already so complicated, even more so complicated. I highly recommend you go seek out that image on the Discord. But long story short, with this revelation, Cable is now Hope's adopted dad, but also, because of Jean's connection, sort of Hope's brother, but also because of Madeline Pryor and Jean, he's also sort of her cousin. It's so wonky, and I love it. It's very Terminator, you know, going back in time to be the origin of yourself kind of thing. It's all clones. It's all time travel. If you overthink it, you're not having fun enough. I think it's great where people try to make these, you know, connective tissues work. And that's where we get who Hope is. And that's my way of letting you guys know, like, when we read Messiah Complex, that's the result of it. And Cable Volume 2, I keep saying this, but I'll say it again. Check it out. It's a really good era of Cable. It's beautiful art. It's fun stories. It leads to a great kind of fight between the modern version of X-Force and Strife in the future. It's something worth checking out. I hope an ounce of what I just said makes sense. I hope I didn't confuse anybody else. I might have even gotten some stuff wrong. I fully admit to that all the time when I'm doing these episodes. It is very hard to keep these timelines and stories kind of straight. But I hope that just mostly me talking about this stuff inspires you to go check out some of these stories. You know, read Cable Volume 2, read Second Coming, read Generation Hope. They're fun pieces of, like, X-Men history. And as always, keep listening to this podcast because it's fun to make this podcast and to talk to you guys on the Discord about X-Men stuff so I can at least have a handful of people to talk about how screwy these comics are but how fun they are. That's it for today. Thank you. Be good, be kind, be brave. Thank you to my patrons who continue to support this show and make it so I can like pay for the servers that host it and all that kind of stuff. I appreciate you guys and hope you guys treat yourselves well. Until next time. Bye.